So I have 5-4. Motion fails. So with that motion that fails, we will be starting activities August 17th with the original start dates of all activities.
Alan Stein, Superintendent Hill City, with the announcement there from Keisha's meeting yesterday. There was a proposal on the table to delay practices and delay high school fall sports slightly. Basically, would shorten the football season by 1 week and have 8 games instead of 9. But that motion, as you just heard, failed by a vote of 5-4, because every vote is always right along the lines lately across the country, and seems to represent the way the country is, kind of divided, 50-50. Kent State Board of Education, a 5-5 vote to basically not affirm the governor's order last week, and that was a 5-5. They needed 6-4 majority, and then Acacia's vote yesterday, 5-4, the motion failing. We'll get Dusty's reaction here with Brent Maycock coming up in a little bit. Last week, I felt like Acacia was going to stick to August 17th. But then after hearing what all the bigger schools were doing, 5A and 6A schools, I thought there was going to be some pressure on Keisha to perhaps back it up 1 week. And to me, backing up 1 week wouldn't have been a horrible thing, because then things would have started 1 week later when it comes to high school sports. And, yeah, you might have one less football game. That made some sense to me, but I didn't think it would be any later than August 24th. And that's what they really were talking about yesterday, was that was basically the proposal, was to back it up a week, and then it was voted down. I thought it would pass. Once I heard the proposal on the table yesterday, I thought it would pass, and it didn't, 5-4. So I was a little bit surprised, but at the same time, there's two ways of looking at this. One, you can say, well, we're going back too soon in regards to practices, this and that. You could also argue we better get as much in as we can now, because we don't know how long we're going to be able to go. And we had Jason Raby, city manager of Beloit, on today, and he said, you know, 75% of the pool season we ended up having. I said, there'd be a lot of administrators right now, and high school coaches, athletic directors, and what else, and school administrators, if you were told right now, I will guarantee you 75% of the school year in class, in school, face-to-face learning, I will guarantee you 75% of your sports will be played this year. Or you can take your chances. It could be 100%. It could be 0%. I would be willing to bet you most administrators, ADs, coaches, teachers, if they could sign up for that deal, would go and sign that in a heartbeat and take 75%. Yeah,
definitely.
So, you know, that's the question. How much high school sports will we get? Will we get any? Will we get some? Will we get a lot? Will we get a little bit? Not any at all? I don't know. But that was the decision yesterday from Keisha. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I watched the whole meeting and was kind of really paying attention to it. And what was kind of surprised me, what you talked about, was with the bigger schools that were going to hold off on starting school. I thought maybe some
Labor
of those,
Day.
Yeah, I thought some of those people that are on that board from those bigger schools like Olathe and just the bigger school districts would be like, nah, we need to wait. We need to hold off on starting practice. They really weren't. I mean, everybody was kind of listening and understanding what would happen here and what would happen there. And, you know, as the meeting went on, I felt like all the stuff people were tweeting about these proposals and stuff and everybody getting all in a tizzy about this could happen, we might lose the first week of football, as it went on, I'm like, I don't think they're gonna pass this. I really didn't think they were, and in the end I was close, but I knew when it was 4-4, I knew the way Stein was gonna vote. I could just tell the way he was talking throughout the whole thing that he was not in favor of
which Hill City out west
back.
Not
yeah
as big a
exactly
deal.
And I knew he was the last one, and I knew he was the way he was gonna vote. Right when he was like, well, it's 4-4. Stein's going to vote no on this, and we're going to, everything's going to start at the right time. As of now, obviously. And, you know, I knew right away when they started talking that practice was starting August 17th. You could tell that right away. Like, even the proposal that Keisha put out, practices were starting August 17th, no matter what, from everything that I was looking at. And so, yeah, for me, it was like, and you can probably get into the discussion about why you would delay things, but yeah, it felt like to me like everything was gonna go off when it was supposed to, the way I was watching and the way it was sounding.
Well, it's the cleanest way to do it, because you don't have to adjust a whole bunch of schedules, although some school districts will perhaps do that. I know of one bigger school district that is not planning on starting practice August 17th, and they may very well start practice after Labor Day, which means they won't play the first couple weeks of the season, because they're putting safety first. And there is that conundrum. And I can certainly understand the mixed messages, and we're going to talk with Brent Maycock about this as well. There's a couple of mixed messages, and one in particular is that it, for all the schools, I know, I think it was Olathe North's superintendent said yesterday at the meeting that they were going to still, even though they were going to start school after Labor Day, they were okay with starting practices August 17th.
Yeah.
And the mixed message you get when you hear that is, okay, so it's not safe to send our kids to school until after Labor Day, but it's okay to send them to a whole bunch of sports practices. Now, if you have tennis practice, there's not that many people. You have cross country, maybe not a ton of people. You can social distance. You know, volleyball, there's, you know, it depends on the school and how many you have. You have a big enough facility, you can space people out. You have 12 on a court at once. Football, you know, you're not having, in these bigger schools, you're not having, you know, 800 to 1,000 students in an enclosed facility. You have maybe 60 to 100 staff, coaches, whatever, support staff, and football players. So it is a little bit different. So there is a mixed message, though, when you see it on the surface that, hey, yeah, we're not starting school, but, hey, football is more important than school. So you can go ahead and start on August 17th. Why aren't we starting school August 17th? I can understand that. The other thing that's out there that is, I think, a bit contradictory a little bit, is that if you're a parent and you send your kid, you sign up your kid for the e-learning, remote learning, which once you sign it the first day of school, your kid has to do it the whole semester. That's how most school districts are handling this because they don't want you going in and out of virtual learning. So if you sign up already for virtual learning for the first semester, in some school districts, you're not allowed to play sports then. So if you choose to do e-learning or remote learning, virtual learning online the first semester, you will not. You will be giving up sports. You will not be able to participate. And I understand that, too, because if you're a parent, you don't feel safe enough to send your kid to school, so you're going to do virtual learning, which is your right, and you know, take care of your kids, no doubt. Make the best decision for you and your family. But then complain about your kid not getting to play sports. Well, which is it here? I mean, you're worried about safety, but yet sports is okay. So we say sports bet is bigger and more important than education. See how it works on both sides? From an administrative standpoint, as we just talked about, and also from a parent standpoint. Now, I could counter that and say, well, you know, I don't see there's, if your kid does online learning all semester, why can't he or she go play golf or tennis where there's not a lot of people involved? It would be a lot safer to do that than to go to school in a room with a whole bunch of people, or a school, a huge building, of course, with a whole bunch of people. So you can understand that's not the message necessarily I think a parent's trying to send is, well, my kid's signed up for e-learning, but now I want my kid to play sports, and I'm upset my kid can't play sports because I chose e-learning. I also can see where the school administrators may say at the bigger schools, well, we're going to start practice August 17th, but school not after Labor Day. I don't think they're trying to say sports is more important per se. I think they're just trying to say, listen, the percentages, the amount of people, plus in a lot of cases this will be outdoors, whereas school's, of course, indoors, that there is a big difference. But I can see how people can take that as, what kind of message are we really sending there on both sides, for a parent and also for an administrator? So we're going to talk more about this. Another part of this whole equation is fan capacity. You know, how are the schools going to handle this? If we do have high school football on September 4th, how is Smith Center, Lakeside, Osborne, Beloit, Lincoln, Pike Valley, St. John's, Concordia, whoever it may be, you know, how are they going to decide? It's going to be a league rule that says only parents can attend, or no fans can attend, or anybody can attend. That is something I talked with a school official yesterday, a couple of school officials last night, and one of them told me, said, you know, I really wish Acacia would just have a blanket policy on that. I'm like, well, I do understand that thinking, but if you're going to be consistent, then Acacia, to me, should have a blanket policy on everything they talked about yesterday, or they should go ahead and allow the schools to start whenever they want to start and do practice whenever they want to do. And if that's the case, then to be consistent, you should say, okay, well, then it's up to you. If we trust you to decide when you're going to open your schools and when you're going to go to practice and whether or not you're going to delay practices because you know your community better than we do, and we're going to allow you to trust your county health officials, then why can't you do the same thing with your fan situation? So if I'm Acacia, I totally stay out of that. And Bill Fafflick basically said that yesterday.
One size fits all is certainly not applicable in this regard, in terms of facilities, in terms of contests, and in terms of how local health authorities will regulate that. So that is a local decision. Your local health department will provide for you your capacity limits for those contests that are held outside, as well as those contests that are held in your facilities.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, this is going to be a bigger, I think it's going to be, this is going to be a bigger obstacle than people even realize. And I know a lot of people are focusing on other things, but if we do have sports, I'll just give you an example. I'll try and come up with a really good example. Beloit Concordia is the easy one for me because they're not in the same league. So let's say the North Central Kansas League that Concordia is in and the North Central Two Association, the league that Beloit's in, they have their own rules. So let's say one league says, let's say the NCAA says only parents can attend games. But the NCKL doesn't have a league-wide policy, so it's up to either individual school or they have a league policy, and that is anybody can attend. Mm-hmm. So you have a sporting event in Concordia, well, everybody can attend, but then Concordia would come down to Beloit, and Beloit has to tell them, sorry, only mom and dad can come.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? In Concordia, I can go. Why can't I go here? We're 30 miles apart. What's the big deal? Can you see the arguments already?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, how are you going to enforce it? What people are going to be at the gates to make sure that, you know, grandma doesn't come in because she's not supposed to? Your aunt, your crazy Uncle Eddie, you know, or whatever. He lets the officials have it. We're not letting him in. Why? You know, can you imagine what? I mean, that's going to be an obstacle unless there is more of a blanket thing. And I understand that thinking. So, you know, and then proving that you're mom and dad. I mean, you could be lying on that.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Ask for ID? If that's what they do. Now, the other thing is, you know, we do streaming of Beloit sports, so you could still be able to watch the games if you don't make it to the games or not allowed to go to the games. You got radio broadcasts of a lot of games, not every single game of all our teams, but we have quite a few on the radio. So, you know, from that standpoint, that could help us from a listening standpoint, and it could help from a streaming viewership standpoint. But at the same time, if you're a parent, you want to be there. Mm-hmm. You want to see your kid play in person, which I totally get. And hopefully, at least parents are able to do that. Now, maybe extended, you know, cousins can't, uncles, aunts, grandparents, you know, maybe nieces, nephews, whatever, might not be able to. That'll be a very interesting thing, and we're going to talk with Brent Maycock about that a little bit as well. So there's lots of obstacles, and then probably the biggest obstacle that we haven't even discussed yet, and that's the obvious one, is what happens if a kid has COVID-19 at a practice, test positive for COVID-19, or a kid... Let's say, I'll give an example here. Let's say it's Osborne and Lakeside. They're not that far apart, are they?
No.
Osborne and Lakeside play 8-man football. Let's say one of the players on one of the teams tests positive for COVID-19, and both teams have what, 12, 13, 14, 15 kids out for football? So many years that's what happens with 8-man, mm-hmm. maybe more. And then mom and dad say, listen, I'm not taking a chance of my kid to play. And then you get four or five parents saying, my kid ain't playing because they have a kid that's positive at other school. And you can say, well, that kid has already been taken care of. He's quarantined. The close contacts are quarantined. There's nothing to worry about. Parents may still say, I'm not taking a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then thus you might not have enough and you got to forfeit the game, or you simply just doesn't count as a game being played. That's what sounds like Keisha is going to do. They're not really going to be too hard on you forfeiting the game if it's a situation like this. Or you could have the team voting and saying, or the coaches saying, we ain't doing it. We ain't going over there. We ain't taking a chance on it. Or you could simply have a team that has, let's say, 15 kids, 20 kids on an 8-man football team. I use 8-man because lower numbers typically, and I'm using football just as an example. What happens if, one tests positive and everybody else is a close contact? The whole team is out of commission for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we see in Major League Baseball? Hello, the Marlins, 17 of the 33 staff members, including players and staff members, coaches, have tested positive. What did the Washington Nationals do that we said on this show hours before it even happened?
Yeah.
We've said this on our show before it even happened. We actually said it, that if I'm the Nationals, I'm not going to Miami. As a team, we're going to take a vote, poll the locker room, whatever. If my manager's concerned on a scale of 1 to 10 says 12, as Dave Martinez did, the manager of the national champion Washington Nationals, if he's scared, don't you think your players are going to follow your leader, which usually happens? So they're going to be worried and concerned. So why would the players go, yeah, let's go to Miami for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3-day series when the Marlins had half their team test positive for COVID-19? Mm. Of course they're going to sit here and make a stand and say, no, I'm not playing. That can happen at the high school level. It can happen at the junior high level. It can happen at any level in any sport. It could happen at band competition. It could happen at choir competition, debate, forensics. It doesn't have to be just sports. And that's going to be the biggest obstacle is how, because they're going to happen. There's going to be positive COVID-19 cases at school districts through the school year. Are they going to shut down school immediately because of one case? No, more than likely not. Are they going to shut down sports or practices because of one case? Well, they might have to because of a lack of numbers, because of quarantines or close contact tracing or whatever it might be, or positive cases. So that is, of course, the biggest obstacle, but there's so many other sub-obstacles, if there's such a term, in regards to fans attending, how are you going to watch the game if you're not allowed to attend the games? School districts have different rules as to they're going to start practices later, so they're going to not play the first 2 weeks of the year, the first week of the year, or whatever the case may be. So this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning.
It is. And this is the jumping off point, if you will, from now until whenever we're going to find out how this is going to work, obviously. But I will say one thing about the biggest difference, I would think, especially in the smaller school districts, would be how many kids might get it that are asymptomatic and nobody, there's never even a test.
Right.
You know, like, that's what I want to know is, like, there's not a lot of testing probably going to be going on. Like, we're talking about MLB, they test every day.
Right.
For every player tests every day, right?
Which there's significant cost.
Yeah. That's not going to happen in these small school districts, right?
Not
so
even in
what,
the big
for
ones.
Me, it's, no. And for me, it's like, you know, what if some kid, and I'm not encouraging this, but, you know, what if some kid feels like he's symptomatic, just doesn't go to practice, nobody tells anything about what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep, you know, and doesn't get a test for a few days and maybe doesn't get a test at all. I don't know. You know,
right.
How's that all going to be enforced, I guess, and how are you going to know?
Or not.
In the small districts. That's where I'm at with it, too. And just the back of my head, I'm like, you know, we have these issues with Major League Baseball, but I don't know when those issues will pop up. There'll be positive tests probably eventually.
Sure. Yeah.
But when do they start and when do people actually go to get tested? And
how soon will they get
the
results?
And if you're asymptomatic, like I said, if you have it and you're asymptomatic, you don't even know you have it. And then you're just going to play and there's never going to be any tests anyway.
Right.
So that's kind of what I'm just interested to see how that's all going to play out once everything gets started.
Well, and as I said with the schools, if you're a mom or a dad, you're a two income family and you both have jobs, or one of you are a single mom or a single dad, and you take your kid and you know your kid has a bit of a fever, but you got to go to work, you can't stay home with your kid and they're going to take a temperature at the door, you can take fever reducing medicine that can bring it down.
Yeah.
And if they're only going to temperature check before school, not check until the very next day at school, that kid could have a fever that's, it might be 99.5 at the door. Okay, he's good. And then he walks in, and at noon, if you took that kid's fever, he might be 101.7. And that doesn't mean they have COVID. It just, you know, but that's obviously would be a concern for spreading anything, let alone COVID. So you've got so many things that are going to happen. I received a message saying that I think the schools are starting later because they need more time to get supplies in. That may be true of a few districts, but of the major districts that we're talking about, because most of the schools that are starting after Labor Day are your big city.
Yeah.
We're talking Wichita, we're talking Kansas City, we're talking Topeka, we're talking the big, big populated 5A, 6A schools. It's about their outbreaks.
Yeah,
that's why they're starting after Labor. They're not starting after Labor Day because they need more time to get supplies. The bigger cities get the supplies typically sooner than the little schools do, and the rural districts do. So the bigger schools, what they're doing is we have an outbreak. Wichita's got a gathering limit now of no more than 15.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand why Wichita schools just voted on starting after Labor Day? That's why. Not supplies. It's because they have an outbreak down there.
Yeah.
Hospital beds are getting fuller and so forth and so on. And that's the same thing that's happened in Kansas City and Topeka. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some school districts, I'm sure, that are delaying school, maybe not until after Labor Day, but starting school a little bit later, so they do have more time to, one, put their plan together, two, to figure out what kind of supplies they need, or they've already ordered hand sanitizer or whatever, wipes and this and that, and they know they're not going to get them until, say, August 20th. And so I was going to start school August 19th, but now we're going to start August 27th because I want to make sure that we get our supplies. Manhattan School District, that was an example. August 12th, they said, that's when we're going to start school. They found out they ain't going to get some of their supplies till maybe August 12th or 13th. They voted recently to school board, and they backed up school 2 weeks, which is probably a very smart move, to August 26th. That allows them to get their ducks in a row. So with the person that sent me that information, I agree with you. I think there are school districts that are backing up school so they have more time to get supplies. In regards to the ones that are waiting all the way to after Labor Day, I think that's mostly school districts that have outbreaks, and they're waiting to hopefully this to calm down or die down.
Yeah. That's absolutely.
So we'll talk more about this coming up with Brent Maycock in a little bit. Let's shift gears here real quickly, and that is, let's go to the Royals. The Royals have a new owner, Patrick Mahomes. When I first saw this yesterday, I was like, come on, this has got to be a joke. Somebody's pulling my leg. No. Patrick Mahomes is one of the smartest men on earth. he should run for president. I'm telling you, Mahomes should run for president when he's 35, because that's when you can run for president.
Yeah, somebody said he should run. He'll probably be on the ticket tomorrow. I'm like, not old enough.
Not yet. But here's the thing. Do you notice that he'll be 35 when his contract runs out? Yeah. So he's lined it all
I'm
up.
Done. Let's do it.
He'll be lined up to be president. He can make a run for presidency in November of whatever that is. But Mahomes, listen, this is brilliant. Every single professional sports franchise of the big sports has gone up in value. Nobody's lost money buying into a team.
No.
They haven't. David Glass made a killing buying the Royals for $96 million. I mean, every single pro franchise's value continues to go up and up and up. Oh, by the way, as an owner, you get perks. Like, I can sit wherever I want, basically. Or I got the suite. Or I got this. I got that. And you have a vote on certain things, maybe, as to, yeah, you know what? I think we should hire this manager. You might have some say. You might not. Maybe that input isn't that important to you. I don't know how much a percentage stake of ownership Patrick Mahomes has in the Kansas City Royals now. That's right. Mahomes is a minority owner of the Kansas City Royals. He bought in with the ownership group that just bought out the Royals from David Glass and company. That was John Sherman, who's the main guy. But there's many different investors in that group.
He's like the 23rd one. So
yeah,
it 23rd. Can't be a huge percentage.
It'd been perfect if he was the 15th, because it'd been number 15. But Mahomes is a big baseball fan. He played baseball. He was really good. People have said he's got a better arm than half the Royal staff right now. So he should just go ahead and put the jersey on. He looks good in the powder blue, I must say. And he's a big baseball fan. Listen, this is a guy that's going to make $503 million if everything works out the rest of his contract. This is a guy that just came into some money, and he's making an investment. And that's much smarter than going out and buying a whole bunch of houses and cars for your buddies and your homies. I mean, listen, did he buy a car? It sounds like he did.
Good
for him, man. He got it. What was it, a Porsche or something? I don't know.
Lamborghini.
Yeah. Well, good for him.
It was a Ferrari.
Ferrari. Yeah. Anyway, and good for him. It's okay to have some fun and spend some money on something you want. But he's not just blowing it on cars and necklaces and all this other stuff. He's investing in a pro sports franchise, the Kansas City Royals. Now, I think it's great that now he keeps an eye on the investment he has right across the street. That makes sense. You know, it always bothered me when Bo Jackson was with the Royals, and then the Chiefs weren't smart enough to understand, hey, Bo, if you want to play football, think of us first. Instead, the Raiders were smart enough to figure that out, and then Bo would go play football for half a season after baseball's over. And it always drove me nuts. I'm like, he should be playing at Arrowhead. Then it'd be real convenient. Just boom, season over, take the jersey off, put the other one on, and go over and play football. And Bo could have done that, by the way. The greatest athlete I've ever seen in my life. And so here, Mahomes didn't buy a stake in the Yankees. He didn't buy a stake in the Cardinals or the Cubs or anything like that. He's buying a stake in the Kansas City Royals. Now, are there better investments than the Royals? Maybe. But if you're in a sports franchise and you invest in any one of these, I don't care if it's the Seattle Kraken, the new hockey team in Seattle, wherever it may be. I mean, these franchises go up in value. It's a very solid investment by Patrick Mahomes. And now he is a minority owner of the Kansas City Royals. Patrick Mahomes, at the age of 24, has a Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl ring, or will have it soon. He is NFL MVP, has a half a billion dollar contract now. And oh yeah, by the way, he owns a sports franchise, a stake in the Kansas City Royals. That guy better be serving Whataburger at Royals games, all right? If people like Whataburger, that's what you should be doing, because he's helping Whataburger to Kansas City. What can Mahomes not do? Mahomes, come on, dude. Let's make this happen. You play basketball, right? Mahomes likes to play basketball.
Yeah.
Bring an NBA franchise to Kansas City. Make it happen. Invest in that.
Next one.
Yeah. So Mahomes, getting it done. The Royals sign Matt Harvey. Familiar name. Starting pitcher of Game 1 and Game 5 of the World Series in 15. The Royals won both those games. Matt Harvey is now a Royal. He'll report to the T-Bones facility, the satellite camp. I think it's a desperate move for a guy that's washed up. I could completely be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's still got some gas left in the tank, but I think that's a reclamation project that the Royals are spending $500,000 on, or $575,000, whatever it is, to see if he's got anything left in the tank. And the Royals already, through five games, have started two relief pitchers. They haven't even had a run through a rotation. Montgomery's hurt, and he's on the injured list now with a lat injury. Junis and Keller are coming back from COVID-19. So all you got is Danny Duffy, and that's really all you got, because Brady Singer's made one major league start in his career. That was on Saturday. Okay, he's a rookie. He was a first-round pick 2 years ago. So you have basically 150 rotation, and then you've got a rookie that's made one start. That's two starters. And now you're already going with Kyle Zimmer, Ronald Bolanos, who you just picked up, and you got a reliever by committee trying to get through a game, which worked out not bad yesterday for the Royals. The Royals are desperate for pitching, and they may actually go ask Rick Sutcliffe. They may talk to Mark Gubazaw. He's an announcer for the Angels. The Royals may go back and get Saberhagen to come out and pitch. The Royals are running out of pitching already, and we have played only five games. Not a good sign. The Royals do lose yesterday, but Whit Merrifield was one of the highlights.
There's the fly ball to left field. Stewart is back. He is all the way back. It is gone for a three-run home run.
Whit had a good game. More on that in a moment. The Royals bullpen, after Tyler Zuber got knocked around, Kyle Zimmer went a couple innings and was effective, but he was on a pitch count. He was the opener, as you can say. And then Tyler Zuber can throw really hard, but he came in and he served up a couple of homers. Royals were up 3-0, and Tigers scored four in the bottom half of that inning, and they go on. That held up. 4-3 was his final. Here's Matheny on his bullpen doing a pretty good job after Zuber departed.
Let's also talk before I walk out of here about how great of a job the rest of that pen did, keeping us in that game one right after the other. Those guys came in and did a real nice job of keeping us in striking distance. You know, unfortunately, we just weren't able to put hits on top of each other. But overall, I thought that pen did a fantastic job. And we know we're the kind of team that's going to play cleaner defense. And we're going to have to capitalize on other teams' mistakes and make sure that we're limiting ours.
All right, so the Royals, Witt's hitting the ball well. He's doing what he normally does. Hit that three-run homer that you just heard. The bullpen pretty solid after Zuber. Zimmer did a decent job being the opener, but the Royals lose 4-3. And in the ninth inning, there was a drop pop up, and Aldoberto Mondesi rounded first two wide. I think he was thinking about going to two and getting in a scoring position. I didn't have as big a problem with this play as all these Royals fans freaking out about it, because Mondesi, I think, was trying to be aggressive. All of a sudden, last moment, he's like, "Well, wait a minute," and he hit the brakes, and it was too late. He went too far. Obviously, rounding first on a pop-up in the ninth inning. You're the tying run. And here's the other thing I don't like about Mondesi being a little bit too loose there, was that he has great speed. He could steal second. If he just plays it somewhat safe there, he can steal second. Not guaranteed, but he could. Then he's in scoring position. But I do understand the thinking that maybe I can get the second on this drop pop-up. But I don't know if he's really running hard the whole time when he got to that point. He was criticized on social media last night. He isn't off to a very good start. There's a lot. I mean, he's a superstar in the making if you can put it all together. But he got erased after that dropped pop-up in the infield that could have got something started for the Royals, because he would have been the tying runner at first, could have stole second, got in scoring position. Maybe the Royals can tie it, go into extra innings, which with I don't know if they got enough pitching to get there or not. But but he got some criticism last night. But at the end of the day, the Royals, I don't think that cost them the game. It cost them maybe a chance to do something in the ninth, but I don't think it cost them the game. But Mondesi, definitely, you know, it's going to have to play better, because he is not off to a good start.
No, you're not. Not at all. And obviously, manager knows that, too. They'll get him going.
Matheny talked about that last night a little bit. He's not going to throw his player under the bus.
No.
Certainly as a first-year manager of a new team, that's the last thing you want to do. well, the old Astros stealing signs, banging on trash cans, so forth and so on. Well, we saw the Royals hit three Astros in an exhibition game, although I don't think either one of them was on really but purpose. Twice was bases loaded.
Yeah.
Last night it was the Dodgers-Astros, and Dodgers obviously are sore about it because they're like, hey, we didn't cheat. Well, there are some teams that have been mentioned as they've cheated a little bit too, but not to the level the Astros did. Dodgers are one of them. And Joe Kelly last night in the sixth inning was pitching with Dodgers. He can throw 100 miles an hour, and he threw behind a couple of Astro hitters, including Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman. So there was a dust-up, benches clearing dust-up, no brawl per se, which could really be bad for COVID. And so there's the bad blood. The Dodgers won the game 5-2, but they're sending a message. First game between the Astros, Dodgers, and Dodgers saying, listen, you guys cheated.
Yeah.
We don't like it, and we're going to send a message. I have no problem with it.
They were down 2-0 and put up a 5 spot, and Kelly's like, this is my chance.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely.
Up 5-2.
They were waiting for whatever spot that was going to be. They were waiting for it. Yeah.
Exactly, because they couldn't do it.
And the Astros had to be ready for it, too.
Can't do it,
The Astros can't be surprised.
No.
I have no problem with it. I have no problem with it whatsoever.
I get a chuckle out of it, to be honest with you.
If you're at least throwing at the guys that are part of the cheating, now if you're throwing at a guy that just joined the team this year,
I don't think that's probably what you want to do.
Right, although he is part of the team and organization. All right, COVID-19, the fallout from the outbreak with the Marlins. 17 members of the Marlins, including 15 players, tested positive in recent days. We called it on our show yesterday before it even happened, and we're not rocket scientists. It's just logic, common sense that I don't see even the national people talking about. And that is... If the Marlins have all this outbreak and they're staying in Philadelphia, not going back to Miami, Baltimore one isn't going to want to play them, and they did. They postponed that series between Baltimore and Miami. But the Phillies were the next team to go to Miami for this weekend's games, and the Nationals have a manager at a heart problems, David Martinez, last year, and then you know came back and led them to the World Series championship. And Dave Martinez says on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm 12. I'm concerned. I'm scared. And the player is obviously concerned by that. Why would you hurry as a national player, as a manager or a player? Why would you as a locker room want to rush down to Miami and play some games against a team where half their players and coaches are tested positive for COVID-19 and haven't even taken the time or don't want to go back to Miami quite yet? Would you want to go to Florida right now with what's happening down in that state? So we said it yesterday on the show 2 hours before it happened that you're going to have teams that are going to just say, listen, we're taking a vote. We're not going. Or you're going to have half the team saying, I ain't going. Well, now we don't have enough to field a team, so we're not going. That's exactly what happened. The Nationals got together, the players and coaches talked, and they all said, we ain't going. And as soon as they said, we ain't going, guess what Major League Baseball said? Marlins aren't playing any games until Monday.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The original plan was that they still play games on Wednesday, which was just incredibly naive.
Go back home and let's play.
Yeah. You've been in Philly for a couple days.
Go to Baltimore and then go back home and let's play is what they would have done.
Well, they wouldn't have got it back there.
Yeah, because those two games were supposed to be in Miami that Baltimore was going to play. And they were in Philly,
right.
But they were scheduled to go to Baltimore on Wednesday and Thursday.
They were going
to
switch that? They were switching that?
Monday and Tuesday were supposed to be Baltimore at home in Miami.
Oh, okay, and then go to Baltimore.
And then they were going to go to Baltimore Philadelphia.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, like, let's go to Baltimore and then go to Miami.
That makes
like,
no
what
sense.
What are you doing? Like, yeah. It never made sense at all.
No. So the Nationals did it upon themselves, which the commissioner should have done right off the bat, and that is, we're not playing any games with the Marlins until we figure this out. Instead, we might be able to play Wednesday. Really? Less than 72 hours after an outbreak? What are you talking about? That goes back to what David Price said. The player's health is not the top priority. I can't argue with him based on that.
No.
So the Nationals said health is our number one priority. We're not playing.
Yeah, exactly.
And as soon as they said that, Major League Baseball came out and said, okay, no games till Monday for the Marlins. Then they moved the Yankees-Orioles series up to play this week because the Phillies and the Yankees can't play their series. The Phillies are shut down until Friday. So there you have it. There you have it. The Yankees and the Orioles were the bystanders in the outbreak, so now they just simply play them against each other so that four teams aren't sitting. It'll just be the two, the Phillies and the Marlins, but the Marlins have to sit all the way till Monday. More NFL players are opting out. Marquise Goodwin, who was traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, a wide receiver, tremendous speed. Him and his wife have lost two babies. They have died over the years. This is a feature ESPN had on E60 or a documentary or whatever. They have a healthy newborn now, and he put a very heartfelt message about a minute long. Did you see this on Twitter, Marquise Goodwin? Saying, I'm opting out, family's first, and this is just for this year. Good for him. And if there's anybody that criticizes that move, then you really need to get off this planet. Six Patriots now. Yesterday when we talked at the end of the show, there were five. Now there's six. Safety Patrick Chung, very important part of the defense of the Patriots. He has decided to opt out. Think about this. Six of the 53 players on their normal roster, 53-man roster, six of the Patriots have said they're opting out, including all-pro, pro bowler, Dante Hightower at linebacker, offensive lineman starter, a fullback, so four starters, and two backups. The Patriots are geniuses. I am going to tell you this right now. I saw it on Twitter, and I can't agree more. The Patriots are the smartest organization in football. And you may be going, where are you going with this, Wade? Oh, hang with me. Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one draft pick, all right, next year when he comes out probably. And the Patriots are going to need a quarterback because, you know, is Cam Newton the long-term answer? Probably not. So this makes complete sense. We don't think we're going to have a full season anyway. We don't even know if we're going to get the whole season underway. So us as Patriots, we're just going to go ahead and tell our players, some of you guys might want to opt out. So you opt out. Oh, we're not going to be as good. Now we're going to really stink. And we get a bad record. Now we get the number one draft pick. Now we get Trevor Lawrence. We might be 0-7. That's only games we play. We get the number one pick. We're going to get Trevor Lawrence. We're going to have our franchise quarterback. Okay, I'm being facetious here a little bit. But somebody threw that out there. That's the genius of Belichick and the Patriots. They're tanking already by having their players opt out. Six Patriots have opted out. Interesting. One guy that doesn't want to opt out, that can't wait to practice, is Alex Smith. Former Chief, horrendous leg injury, almost died. Alex Smith has been cleared to practice. What an amazing story. If Alex Smith takes one snap at an NFL game, it is a tremendous accomplishment.
Oh, yeah.
That would be enough. Now, probably not for Alex Smith, but for most it would be.
Yes.
Joey Bosa is rich now. 5-year, $135 million extension. Why can the Chargers afford that? Because they aren't paying a quarterback a ton of money. They got Tyrod Taylor and a rookie, and he gets $102 million guaranteed. He's already in 2 years, been a two-time Pro Bowler. He is a force defensively. Joey Bosa, Chargers, $135 million, 5-year extension with the Chargers. Who said nobody has money during COVID-19? And speaking of money, the Big 12 is talking about, actually have already done it, adding games that are scheduled. They're trying to fill, supposedly, 12-game schedule. Iowa State's added Ball State. You see this? There's a week zero now. You can start games the week of August 29th or whatever it is that weekend. KU's now going to play Southern Illinois. And they're going to. It sounds like what's going to happen is college football is going to have 16 weeks to play 11 or 12 games. So you might have – it gives you a week off here and there if there's an outbreak or rescheduling. So they're allowing a week zero is what they're calling it. And so obviously the Power 5 conferences will probably try to take advantage of that. Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC have talked about having a 9-game schedule league-wise and then adding a 1, a non-conference game, to make it a 10, whereas the Pac-12 and the Big 10 are not going to have non-conference games, although the Pac-12 now seems to think that there maybe could be a 10-game slate, but that would include a conference title game, but they could move that to any weekend in December of what they choose. That gives them flexibility. Why is the Big 12 doing this and the Big 10? Why isn't the Big 10 doing this? If the Big 12 is doing it, why isn't the Big 10 like, oh my God, let's get another game or whatever? It's simple. The Big 10 is a much better situation financially than the Big 12. The Big 12 needs the money more than the Big 10, and so thus the Big 12 is sitting here going, hey, if we can add Ball State, Iowa State, that's another game. There's money in the coffers. We have KU with Southern Illinois. Okay, that might not be a ton of money if nobody goes to the game, if you're not going to support KU football. But still, it is another game that could be televised. And whatever, we're talking money. That's what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line, as with almost everything. You know, we're, all of a sudden you're going with conferences saying, we're only going to play 9 games, and we're having no non-cons, so now you're having a few conferences say, hey, wait a minute, we can add 1. Oh, wait a minute, we can add 2. Well, you know what? Let's just shoot for 12 now. What possibly has changed with the outbreak in our country to give you hope that you're going to play 12 when you went down the 9 with other conferences? I don't quite understand it, other than it's all about, hey, let's line it up just in case we can play all of them. We're going to. We're going to get all that money. That's what it's about.
Oh, without a doubt. Gotta make it somewhere.
Money, money, money. Money.